Well, good morning and welcome to the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast. I'm Ashton Hines, half of the Real Estate Heavyweights. I'm the newbie of the group. I've got four flips under my belt. I've got a long-term hold. I'm a real estate agent. I help people buy and sell. I'm also a physical therapist assistant working full-time, trying to figure out how to go full-time into real estate. And navigating those waters is difficult. Luckily, I have someone by my side. He's become a really good friend and a mentor. It's Tavis Westbrook, the other side of the real estate heavyweights. He's got 200 flips at least under his belt. He's got a commercial building, multiple rentals, 20 years experience in the business. And we wax poetic every Friday about the Dallas real estate market and how to figure out how to invest and make money and make sense of this crazy place that we live. We also come to you with interviews like we just did with Scotty Sanders. We've got multiple interviews, so please go back and check those out if you have not already. Also, if you have not, please like, subscribe, share this episode with someone that you love because I think they would like it just as much as you do. Well, it's a short intro today because we've got a lot going on, and I think you are going to want to hear all about what we've got today's episode. We've got the DFW market update. A major suburb in Dallas is banning short-term rentals. And we also talk about our time at the White Rock Tour of Homes. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Now, please, someone ring that bell.
And I think they were on the same team, but because the lady was staring back at her because she was trying to talk to me when you're not supposed to talk. And she's, you know, telling her to be quiet. She got all aggressive and like flipping her off and like.
One of these houses is a multi-million dollar house. Literally had a cow trough for a pool out back or a pond or whatever. They had a cow trough back there and it was intentionally done at a pond. We don't know what it was. It wasn't a fountain. It wasn't a koi pond. It's just a thing of water. And it was just this, it was a cow trough.
We learned about Ashton's childhood. Yes. And
you are now listening to the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast.
You see this guy here staring back at you? That's your toughest opponent. Every time you get into the ring, that's who you're going against. I believe that in boxing, and I do believe that in life.
Your weekly deep dive into DFW real estate, life, and beyond. With your hosts, Tavis Westbrook and Ashton Hines.
All right, we're rolling. What's up, Tavis? How are you today?
Ashton, I'm doing well.
Good.
Thank you for asking, sir.
Oh, you're welcome. One of my hilarious jokes in home health is when I ask someone how they're doing or something, they'll say, "Oh, well, I'm alive," or "What are we doing today?" "Oh, let's walk." "Oh, you're going to kill me." I'm like, "Ah, there's so much paperwork." I think it's hilarious. You know, but to the 80-year-old who's, you know, relatively close to that, they sometimes chuckle, but I actually, little side note, I have never had anyone die in a home health session. I have called people to set up a time to go see them tomorrow, and I'm informed by the family member that will be impossible. They passed away yesterday. We told your office. It's always embarrassing. I did knock on one door, and they were very sweet about it, but I guess he had passed away that day. So I've had a few of those, but I've never had anyone die in a session. Well, the other day, I thought it happened. Oh my God. I was working with a guy. New amputee. He's been having some just different issues. He's got a wound. But we took him to the kitchen, got him in the wheelchair. We're trying to stand up at the sink. We're working on strength of his residual leg. And we got back into the bedroom and I'm about to put him back into bed. And all of a sudden he just starts making this noise and his caregiver said, "I think he's passing out." Well, then he kind of starts curling up and he makes this kind of eerie, really large exhale. And I thought, and his eyes rolled back into his head. And I thought, this guy just died. I really thought he just took his last breath. And I kind of panic called 911. I've called 911 probably 10 times since I've worked as a therapist, once a year or so. Something happens, I'll have to call him. And at this point, it's pretty normal. It doesn't freak me out. And I know what to expect when the firefighters come in and all that stuff. And basically, they don't care that I'm there. I used to think, oh, they need all this information. No, just get out of the way. They have their own protocol. Here's the medicine. I tell the family, get a bag together. You're going to go to the hospital, get your meds. But anyway, I kind of panic called 911. It's been a long time since I did that. And the girl was taking her sweet time. And
did you dial 611?
No, I did.
Or did you dial 911 the first time? 911,
yeah. And I was talking to her, and about three quarters of the way, through her getting all the information, he says a little bit of something. And he came back, and
he starts mumbling and then he starts talking. And I said, do you want that? Do you want the ambulance to come out? No. And I was like, okay. And so then his wife came in and it was the weirdest thing. I thought that was the time. I was like, man, I have checked that box, but it freaked me out. Definitely freaked me out. And then what's really weird, and this tells you where people's minds are. So I guess that 911 had been out there a week before. So the next time I go out there, they say, hey, can you take your shoes off? Can you put these booties on? Which we'll talk about that later, because we had to do that at the White Rock home tour all weekend. But the wife asked me to put little booties on or take my shoes off. So I took them off. And her takeaway from the time that 911 did have to come a couple weeks earlier was they really messed up her carpet. They came in and they walked all over her carpet and got it dirty. So her big concern for me is, hey, not thanks for being here the other day, you know, trying to help my husband out. It's like, hey, by the way, don't be one of those guys that's getting my rug dirty in here. So,
don't get my carpet dirty.
But
anymore.
It's always an adventure in home health. If you do not know, my name is Ashton Hines. Not only do I do real estate, but I do home health and I do physical therapy. I'm a physical therapist assistant. So I get some fun stories every once in a while. But we are going to talk today about our White Rock tour that we did over the weekend. It was a lot of fun. I know you told me the other day you're walking a couple houses. Did you gotten any bids this week?
I did. I put two offers out yesterday. I haven't executed them yet. So we will
see how it goes.
We shall see. One of them's close. I think one of them's got a good shot. Okay. It's actually an older lady, and I believe her kids are ready for her to sell the house. Yeah. I don't know where she's going necessarily, if she's moving in with one of them or what, but the kids weren't there, but the kids were very excited that she was considering this option. And I was there with an agent that's known her for 30 years or so. So very, very intuitive late 80s woman that was very sharp and had a lot of her information stacked and together and was very nice conversation to sit down to. You know, so I was going to ask you, surely you've got some great stories and it's probably helped your wisdom and your perspective on life as you have worked with your clients over the years. I'm sure you've learned quite a bit, right? About
life,
somebody twice your age and just obviously, you know, them going through physical therapy now and different things like that, you know, of what's important to them. So,
no, I mean, there's,
what would be your top three takeaways?
That's a good question. I've actually thought about a quick little side note. I'm all medicated. I've got some allergies going on. So if my thought process is not great today, I'm pretty medicated, but
so that's number one.
Medication sucks. Well, I've actually thought about interviewing some people and talking about their stories, cause there are so many great stories, but normally the basics, if value the time. They always say it goes fast. And you see these people that are, not only do they have kids, but now they have grandkids that are grown. And so they've seen a couple cycles of life. And the thing that I take away always is I don't know that I'll ever want to quit working, because I see a lot of these people that whenever they decide that they're done mentally, they just sit at the house and there's really little differentiation between day to day. Their friend group really goes away. And it's really sad. And the best people that I've worked with, actually, I had a 90-year-old the other day. She still runs her oil and gas business out of her house. She's 90. She makes all of the decisions.
Wow.
So the people who are active and they're out and they're going and they're keeping their mind busy, those are the people that I really admire, and they have the lifestyle that I want. So long term, whether it's real estate or something else, I for sure want to stay busy, be active in some sort of organization or business. The idea of retirement and sitting at the house is just depressing. And I really hate that. The other thing that I typically get from it, and it's, you know, I've worked in all over Dallas, from Highland Park, super high end, Plano, all the way down to some really low income places in Dallas and Garland and Mesquite. And there's a huge difference in the city of Dallas. And whenever it comes to medical stuff, everyone's the same. And it doesn't matter how much money you have or the resources you have. At some point, we all have these really basic needs. And it really does highlight this fact that we're just so similar. And especially here, it's such a melting pot. People are from all over the world. People have traveled all over the world. there are all sorts of religions. And what's interesting, one of the nice things I can do, I can walk into someone's house in a couple minutes. I can pretty much tell a lot of times sort of where they are religion wise. Cause there's just so many little signs of, okay, you're this, you're that. They have this picture here. They have this on the wall. And I enjoy sort of doing detective work of where I am and what are these people about. But it's been eye-opening, you know, growing up in the Christian faith, seeing, not really ever knowing anyone that was Muslim or Hindu or any of those, knowing families that are like that and being super nice and also being jerks, and also having Christian families that are super nice and super jerks. It's just like, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. There's not this overriding sense of, okay, this is the right one. It's just, there's really good people and there's complete jerks, and it doesn't matter your background. So yeah, I have very much enjoyed that journey. And
that's a good word.
So it does.
That's a good word. And I think you got to keep an open mind, right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, cause that's obviously, we're not here to judge.
Yeah, no, it really does open you up like that.
Especially in society, right? Where, you know, it's such a counterproductive scenario, right? Cause I mean, the whole idea of all of these turmoil and somebody feeling like their religion's better than another one, etc. You know, the basis of most religions have to do with love and peace and, you know,
grace. Yeah.
You name it, right? You know, positive attributes, yep. Right? But then as soon as there's a disagreement with somebody else's religion, then it quickly turns into hate, right?
Yeah.
So that line of love and hate is like, literally there between any cross boundaries of religion, which is incredibly upsetting in the sense that exists.
But it is, it has been, it's nice to be able to sit down with someone and connect, try to do everything you can to really connect with them on a human level in 5 minutes, because they hear a stranger in their house, they're going through some sort of medical something, or you're talking to the son or the daughter and they're trying to, you're taking care of mom or dad. And you really do have to connect in a way that, okay, yeah, you know what you're talking about and you're here to help them out. And that's a skill that I think I'll carry forever. I don't know exactly how it'll carry over everywhere. And I mean, it'll definitely help with real estate and all sorts of stuff, but sort of being a chameleon, matching tone, matching, you know, energy that someone's giving you back. And then also just being able to pick up on little bitty things and try to connect. That's probably the biggest thing I've gotten, you know, and knowing that if you can do that and put someone's mind at ease, they'll open up to you and you can get a lot of really great things done. And a lot of times they haven't been able to do that in a while because someone else, you know, can't come in and connect. Because so many people, they go into a strange home and they don't want to sit on the couch, or they don't pet dogs or whatever it is. Like, okay, you don't belong here. But if you can go in and make yourself comfortable on a dirty bed and pet their dog and give them a treat and ask about whatever little trinket they've got, it just does think different things for them. And it doesn't matter their background. It kind of paves the way. So yeah, that's awesome. My background. So,
well, you're built for it. You're built for it. Even though you don't enjoy the career aspect.
I enjoy the, I actually enjoy the
pieces
work
of this that you're definitely,
I enjoy
built
the
for.
Work. It's the minutia and the paperwork and the statistics of the company saying, hey, we've last month we were at 49.3%, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't care. I just want to go work with people, you know? So yeah, it's an ebb and flow. And so my license is actually up for renewal this year. It's 2 years. So I'll renew it and I'll be doing therapy for a while, I'm sure, on and off. So anyway, why don't we get into a little bit of a market update? So in Dallas, the biggest thing that's happening is year over year, our sales price actually has dropped 1.2% over our entire MLS. So sales prices are dropping. This is where the news takes it and they make a huge deal out of it and say prices are crashing. But it is ticked down, and the month supply and new, you know, homes for sale number is going up. So there's more and more supply. There's less things selling. They're selling for less. It's just a frozen up market. I've got a couple of buyers right now. I'm hoping to put in a contract today on a condo. We've talked about the condo thing. We found a really nice one and it's in a nice location. So I'm just holding my breath that it works out and they can get their condo and they can kind of move on with their investing journey. But I had another couple deals either completely fall apart, or I've had investors basically just say, I'm waiting for a while. It's just a hard market to make interest rates and rents make sense as without having to put a ton of money into a house. So it's definitely different. It's a hard one. And I know talking to Dustin down in Austin and Megan, they've got some flips going. They've had a couple offers, a little bit lowball offers. They're really hoping that a decent offer comes through. Dustin worked with another investor down there. He says he's about to lose money for the first time in a while. He's going to lose about $50,000 on a deal. Yeah. Oh, man. So it's tough, you know, you can do all your work and you can underwrite and do all the right things. And then the market shifts and it's really tough. And, sometimes it just is what it is. And we've talked to a couple of people like Scotty last week. And when you're trying to grow, one of the things that allows you to grow and gives you a little peace of mind is having that buffer, because it's not always going to go right. And you have to be able to absorb some of that without it completely ruining you. And it's hard to do if you're new on your journey, but if you've been doing this a while, this is definitely the type of market where it's like, look, make good decisions and have something there in case it all goes poorly. I know you've done that. I mean, you've definitely, you're on the conservative side of things, of underwriting. You're on the conservative side of your equity position in certain houses and, you know, holding on to things. I think you and Tabitha are really smart about how you're building your portfolio overall.
Yeah. I wanted to, you know, add to the value, because again, I'm looking in specific pockets for value. And we talked about this last week, that there's still, you know, high demand with good properties. If it's priced right and, you know, if it's in a good pocket and it's new on the market.
Yeah.
Now, anything kind of within a week on the market, you can expect that if it's a good property and it's priced right, it's probably going to try multiple offers. So for the news media and stuff, obviously they're going to put out what sells. And to say that the properties have declined by 1.2%, is obviously a huge selling point to the media. If you think about it, though, 1.2% is not a lot. You got a $1 million home. You're basically saying it went down $10,200, right? So it's not a lot when you think about it in perspective. $500,000, you know, home went down 5%. Yeah. Now, this is on the average. So what it's saying is year over year, average statistics, what is the average sales price from last year? What is the average sales price to this year, according to what's going on today in this market? Now, keep in mind what inventory is doing and the amount of sales on the market because of interest rates is less to choose from. So that's all going to change things on the, you know, the quality of the home, you know, whether it's a good property that's selling or whether it's a seller that's in a distressed situation because their finances are upside down and they have to sell right now. You know, that's going to change all of these different value indicators. So just for our audience out there, just be aware that this isn't some kind of information to take it and run and go, oh, this is the time to buy. Because I'll tell you, the struggle is still real when we're trying to buy a property, and the reality has to sit in. I'm at a point right now where pretty much every offer I'm sending, I'm giving a complete breakdown of how I arrived at my number. And the reason I'm doing it is because these numbers are, you know, people used to think $100,000 spread was perfect to buy a flip. Well, it was 15 years ago, but that's when you could do a renovation, you know, on a 2,000 square foot home. You could do it for $40,000. You can't do that now, you know. And now we're at an age point where a lot of these homes built prior to 1985, the plumbing's going out. I've got two right now, and one of them we tested last week that's in Garland, built 1979, I think, or something like that. Anyways, the test failed. And so, you know, there's $20,000 in plumbing repair. So it's just becoming a routine thing now that you're going to do that. Now, this house I looked at yesterday in Carrollton, I wrote an offer on. Fortunately, the plumbing had already been changed, you know, so that's great. But I mean, it's something you have to pay attention to. And so the difference is now that $40,000 of rehab, you know, rehab number that used to be the case back in the early, you know, 2009, 2010, 11, et cetera, that number now I'm plugging in $40 to $45 a foot. So now it's $80,000 to $90,000.
Yeah.
It doubled in the expense. So $100,000 spread doesn't get you there. $100,000 spread on a $80,000, $90,000 renovation is breaking you even or costing you money, because your cost of sale for me, license is around 5%. If you're unlicensed and you're paying an agent, it's going to be somewhere around 8%.
Excuse me. So,
and here's the other thing. Price points have gone up. So all of these percentages that we're using, you know, cost of sale, for instance, at $40,000 of rehab back in the day, 2009, 2010, that was on a property that sold for $200,000, right? So the cost of sale on that was 10 grand. Now we're talking ARV is 400,000. So now 20 grand. So everything has gone up. Everything's doubled. So what's happened is now these yields, when you're seeing an ARV at 475 and I've got to buy it for 300,000, somebody's freaking out because that's $175,000 spread, right? But the reality is there's only about $50,000 to $60,000 worth of profit when you break it down, right?
And you got to be able to absorb if the market moves or things get more expensive or if something goes wrong, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, we say it's conservative, but the reality is when you're dealing with those big of numbers, you stub your toe. If you stub your toe on plumbing, that's $20,000 right there. So if you're buying something and you're only looking to make $40,000 on the property, you just cut your profit in half by fixing something that's broke that gives somebody peace of mind, but it's not like you put a pool in. It's not like you added value somehow. You know, you're not doing anything other than repairing something. And if you don't do it, you know, then you're going to get kicked hard. And same thing with roofs right now. If the roof is older than 15 years, most insurance companies won't insure it. So the average roof right now is $15,000 to $20,000. I mean, I'm lucky if I can get a roof done for, you know, under 10. It just depends on how many ridges there are and how complicated it is and how many layers are on the roof that we got to take off and haul away. You know, all those different factors play a part.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated, and I'm glad you're great with your numbers, and it's nice to watch. And I want to get in the game. I want to flip something this year. I'd love to get something. I might try to be picking something up on market like Dustin's doing and Megan's doing down in Austin. So we'll see. But why don't we talk a little bit about the news?
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
From Dallas, Texas, The Flash, apparently official.
There's good news and bad news.
This is a massive story. Who wouldn't publish it?
We landed on the moon!
Man, I've got certain information, all right? Certain things have come to light.
And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
So the big news item of today or yesterday was Plano, which is where Tavis resides and is right next to where I live. They've had an ongoing battle in the city council, and on Monday night they had their supposedly quote unquote final vote, and it was unanimous that they voted to ban short-term rentals. So that's the headline, but basically it comes down to, from what we can tell, they're pretty much banning new short-term rentals. If you had one that was already online, you can stay. And you have to register it with the city. And then there's also a little carve out. I think Dallas did something similar. There's certain zones that you can have them in. I don't know. I'm sure there's a map somewhere, but there are a small little caveats of, okay, we're going to allow them here and here. The question that I had was, and it's not clear, is if for some reason someone has a registered short-term rental and in 3 years they decide to sell it to another investor that wants to keep it as a short-term rental, does that registration and grandfathering, does that transfer? And that's not clear.
Yeah.
And so we'll have to figure that out. But Tavis, you spent some time at this, you spent some time at the city council at some point, didn't you? You went down there?
I did. Yeah. And it was quite interesting. I've been to different city council meetings over the years. But this one, you know, the best way I could describe it, and when I came home to Tabitha and everybody else, I was like, man, this is like being in the movie Shrek when they, you know, get out there, they start picketing, you know, how bad an ogre is, right? And it was like that with this Homeowners United or whatever they call themselves. But, you know, somebody got up to speak, and you could tell city council and everybody has heard these same people over and over and over and over again. And they're saying the same thing. And they get up and somebody gets up and says, how many of you are here with me today with, you know, the homeowner, you know, Plano United or whatever. And the whole room stood up. Just, I mean, there was probably like five or six people. And I'm sitting next to this older couple I'm sitting next to, there were some screws loose there, but they stood up, and I'm like, okay. You know, and so, of course, it automatically outs you, you know, like who's for it and who's against it. And so I just kind of sat there quiet. And then she was kind of trying to poke at me, of course, being loud. People around her getting mad. And she's like flipping them off and like being all super aggressive. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm just.
And these are the people advocating for no short-term rentals because they don't want crazy people coming in and renting houses. You know, it's like, oh,
100%. And I think they were on the same team, but because the lady was staring back at her because she was trying to talk to me when you're not supposed to talk, and she's, you know, telling her to be quiet, she got all aggressive and like flipping her off and like, turn your head the other way, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like,
so y'all didn't stand a chance. Like, at that place, y'all had not organized. Y'all did not bring your signs. You didn't sit together.
I mean, really, I think the decisions had already kind of been made. You know, again, for you listeners out there, short-term rentals, anything classified for rentals less than 30 days, right? And so things had already been classified, but they were breaking it down based on off-site management, which is mostly what you see in Airbnb and VRBO. And then you have your on-site management, which is like somebody, for instance, one guy got up to speak and he was an older retired man. And he's like, hey, this is how I supplement retirement income. He goes, when I'm out of town, I rent my place out, you know, or when I'm in town, I might rent two or three rooms out for a weekend or something. Sometimes it's repeat people.
Sit down, old man.
And so he was pretty upset, right? Because he's like, how can you tell me I can't do this? Like, there's no parties here. There's no issues. The neighbors don't even know. Like, and nobody would ever know. But I think because they're using these platforms, I mean, that's how they identify. Like, for instance, I got letters from the city saying, hey, this hearing's here. And they knew just from going in and doing their research on Airbnb, and they were able to back into it deep enough and I guess get enough information from Airbnb. Because Airbnb and VRBO does not give the property address. But they were able to research enough to figure out who owns it and send a letter to my company about, you know, the address on record. So nevertheless, I mean, again, mine are all plus 30 days. But because I'm already, you know, grandfathered in, I'll probably go ahead and register. Just that way I have that option if I need to lease it for whatever days under 30. You know, if we have a big event here or
World
something,
Cup.
You know, and
you could
they're faking
it. World Cup.
Yeah. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
You know? So, and again, mine are not the problematic ones that people have had issue with. And I do think there needs to be some kind of regulation because of what has been done with the brothels.
Plano has a brothel problem. Plano has, look, they're in the news. All those massage places.
I think they
were
trying to bring it back, right? There was brothels in Plano.
Well, no, they've been in the news. No, they've been in the news recently. Those massage places, they came down on.
Oh, that too. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, what is going on? So, it is in the news. And there was a whole ring of massage places that always oddly are open at midnight, that foot massage place. And, I've been walking around and my feet
Plano's
hurt.
Plano's got money. So,
no, I mean, it is weird that they have been coming down on that. And but it's in the news and people get all frustrated. But here's what I think. Here's my rule. If you go to those and you're adamantly against Airbnb, you need to register with Airbnb and you should never be able to rent an Airbnb anywhere in the country.
You
shouldn't be able to go get a short-term rental anywhere if you're so vehemently, because you can't be the person of like, well, not in my neighborhood, but whenever I go to San Francisco, that's really, we really like to stay in this nice little bungalow down the street. No, that's not how it's going to go. I think they should have to register, and we should all know if Janet from Central Plano goes to, you know, San Diego and rents an Airbnb on the beach. That's not going to happen. So anyway, it sucks for you guys that have invested in it, but
you know, They had to overturn their decision in the city of Dallas, you know, because they banned everything. And of course, I think they saw this huge potential lawsuit, you know, with things that were already operating. So, I mean, at least Plano was saying, hey, no more new ones. And there was also an argument to be had. Like, I think there's 383 operating Airbnbs or VRBOs, short-term rentals in the city of Plano. And they said, in reality, that only makes up like 1.8% or something of our housing population in Plano. So they're like, really? And at the end of the day, there's 383 properties that are already operating this way. You guys are complaining. It's 1.8% of our population. So, you know, but it, again, it just, people hear the news and the media runs and people just freak out and, you know, they make their statements and then there's jealousy and there's everything else that comes along.
Well, and I think
that.
Should be some rules. You know, you shouldn't, you know, the best they can do.
I definitely think there should
be rules.
And
Airbnb on their platform, I think, has worked to try to, with the AI algorithm, to know this is a suspicious, this is a suspicious listing or a booking, and they try to help you out. I'm not on that side, and Megan and Dustin, they sold theirs there in Pflugerville. I know that they are trying, and I'm sure long-term it'll sort of flush its way out. And actually, in this article, Plano said, well, we're either going to get sued now or later. they know that they're up for a legal fight. And I think part of it is, I read another article a month ago or so, a lot of times the cities are, they're running the course, they're doing what they can to let their citizens be heard. But at the end of the day, they know it might come down to a court ruling that says you just can't ban these. The interesting part for me in Texas, and I know we got to get going because we got an interview here in a minute with your friend, but in Texas, HOAs are insanely strong. And if your HOA says no short-term rentals, no questions asked, no short-term rentals. But if the city tries to ban it, now it's this huge deal and you're infringing on my rights. And so maybe it's because whenever you bought the house, you signed off on the HOA rules, you kind of know what's going on when you get there. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know how that...
That's exactly what it is. I mean, and that argument was brought up by actually internal of city council members themselves arguing
logic
up there. And they had to take a recess. And at this point, it was already like 10 o'clock at night, the night that I was there. And this was like a Monday night a couple weeks ago. And you could tell everybody was exhausted and frustrated. And they start arguing between themselves because of just lack of knowledge. And trying to understand, you know,
the nuances,
rights, property rights. And that argument got brought up. Well, how come HOA can do it and, you know, homeowners can't without an HOA? And that's like, you know, again, it's because of these regulations that are put in when you knowingly buy the property versus owning a property and having freedom and then trying to change it later. That's why you can't go into an old neighbor. That's why, if anything, you see voluntary HOA boards that may be created in a neighborhood, but it's not a mandatory. Yeah. A mandatory has to be part of the deed restrictions when the property is developed, right? Which has gotten pretty crazy because nowadays it's very rare that you see a subdivision built without HOA these days. And I don't know if the city is now making that part of the regimen.
They may require it for some sort of incentives, or if you're going to, when was the last time you saw a new development that was, I mean, it would be in an unincorporated area out in the county or something where you have, you know, an acre lot and you were able to have the barn and stuff. You see it, you know, if you're driving between here and Wichita Falls. I pick on Wichita Falls. I don't know why that's my go-to town that's not close to here, but we drive through there going to Amarillo. But anyway, it's going to be complicated. We'll keep you updated on that. So let's talk a little bit about our trip to White Rock Tour of Homes that we did this last weekend. Tavis was a corporate sponsor. We got to tour around together. Saturday was raining. It was cold. We were maybe going to, we went, but Saturday was raining. We went Sunday.
Saturday was rainy, cold.
Yes. We didn't even know if they were going to do it, but evidently a lot of people showed up Saturday, but a ton of people showed up Sunday because Saturday was kind of a washout. So there are six homes on the tour. We all met up at the first one and we toured around. It was a lot of fun. And Walter, who's been on the podcast, his wife, and then Tavis, his wife, and Sam, your nephew that is in the business, were there. And we were all walking around. It was fun because you could kind of comment on this house and, oh, I like this. And Tavis is an expert and a lot of people there knew him because he's been a sponsor for a long time. So what are some of the highlights for you on the tour? Does anything stick out specifically? I know it's hard for people listening because you didn't specifically see the houses, but we can try to link something on the website. But
I will say this. I can't imagine the day that it was raining and how people were going through the homes and then exiting. Because, of course, Ashton kind of tapped on this earlier about removing shoes. But, you know, the situation here is that, you know, people want you to be courteous and take your shoes off or put the booties on. Well, most of the exits out of this home to manage traffic, if you will, traffic control, they have you exit through the home and walk through the yard. And I can't imagine how that was the day it was super rainy. So I would say, you know, if you can, probably go when it's not raining, because I'm sure that was a disaster and it was probably tearing up people's yards and your shoes and what have you walking through the yard. You know, for me, it's always exciting. I mean, I love architecture. I love design. I love creativity, you know, so it was great to see, you know, how things were, you know, put together. And then of course it's even further when you see people's, you know, furniture choices and their decor and their artwork and, you know, and things like that, and how people make certain spaces work for them. You know, I was in one of the homes that we did that hosted the reception on Friday night, and it was a very big open family room, and I actually really liked it. They had kind of the living room set up in two pieces where you had a smaller sitting area closer to the TV and then another like sitting area in the middle, kind of like a hotel lobby. And I really enjoyed that. My wife, not so much. I think she likes TV, so she just wanted to be this big giant couch, you know, that could everybody gather around and watch TV. But
so, yeah, I know what Tabitha's, y'all have a big family. You want the couch, you have the TV. A lot of those mid-century layouts, they're just not really made for that huge family room. That wasn't really anywhere. They're more segmented. They're really, really cool, but you didn't have that in many of those. I guess the last house had that really huge living room when you first walked in. But the other interesting thing is, from a technology standpoint, all these houses have those sort of smaller framed out TVs. TVs are just not a huge player in the mid-century style. You don't get the sense that a lot of these people are camping out with 85-inch TVs just watching the basketball game, because I didn't see any of that really in any of those houses.
Yeah. Now, so there was, you know, a couple of homes that really stood out to me. Of course, now I can't think of the name of the street, but it was the one on the cul-de-sac built in 2010. Yeah. Cliff Welch.
Wyatt Circle.
Had built it, or Cliff Welch is the architect on it. Famous Dallas architect that's been up and coming for many years, is responsible for many really cool homes in Dallas that have been on the AIA home tour as well as White Rock home tour as well. So one of the interesting things that I enjoyed is Walter and I were walking through that master bedroom into the master bath in that particular home. And we walked through the little walkway or the hallway that connected the bedroom and the master bath together. And there was a big giant window there staring into the stairwell that you come up from the first floor. And I said, I guarantee you that was probably an afterthought when they were framing the home. They were framing it, and otherwise it becomes this really closed in hallway. So they probably thought about putting this glass window here, because why not? And, you know, it was a couple little details like that. And it was funny, you know, when we were actually talking to Cliff on the way out, Walter had told him how much he loved that detail. And I had told Walter in the you know, when we were standing up there, I said, man, you know, that's not something you can typically draw very easily. It's something you have to walk and feel. So I was like, a good architect will come walk their own project during the framing stage and see if there should be any changes or any different design details. And sure enough, that's what Cliff said. He's like, hey, yeah. He goes, that was actually an accident. He says, we showed up at the framing stage, and sometimes you see things and you make changes. And we're like, bingo. Like, so it was a lot of really cool things like that.
That house was really well put together just in general. They had the sheetrock that ended about a half inch off the floor. That was,
I was going to say, it's probably one of your first times seeing that of the zero reveal, or, you know, you call it reveal or zero trim.
No trim around the doors.
And that negative reveal, you know.
The craftsmanship and the thoughtfulness of how all of it went together. It was a 2-bed, 2.5 bath. It was a really interesting layout, even just outside where the pool equipment was and the HVAC little house. It was just every inch of that house seemed to be thought out really, really well.
Everything had a place. Everything had a place. And the simplistic aspects, which are very difficult to achieve, which is kind of seems like an oxymoron, right? In that sense, like you're making all this effort to minimize detail,
right?
Like, although you're creating detail, but you're minimizing trim and different pieces.
There was no extra weird space, weird, you know, spacing in hallways, or it all looked great.
The way the house flowed inside and outside, you know, is the iconic
hallmark
of mid-century modern, right? We talked about that a few weeks ago on our podcast about some different things, elements that make mid-century modern design work. And that was a true kind of player in that game. And then, of course, cascading over, you know, the side of the hill and the placement of the pool and the placement of the balconies and just the way it laid out on the lot was super cool.
Yep. So. Well, the other two little things that stick out to me, there was one of these houses, it's a multi-million dollar house, literally had a cow trough for a pool out back or a pond or whatever. They had a cow trough back there and it was intentionally done at a pond. We don't know what it was. It wasn't a fountain. It wasn't a koi pond. It's just a thing of water. And it was just this, it was a cattle trough.
We learned about Ashton's childhood and his fear of
my uncle
troughs.
Would always dare me to, oh yeah, I swim in that. And they had one and that's where all the cows drank out of. And it was mossy and they did have koi fish in there. So I was like, no on that one. And then the other really, really cool feature was this, it was a family house. They had renovated, they had added onto it and there was a hidden room. It's like the boyhood dream where you had this bookcase, it opens up and it goes down this set of stairs. And this was a new area and it was all concrete, real cool, masculine Texas basement. And that really, that was the only place that they had this man room, that there was a cool TV down there and a bar. That was awesome. I mean, man, I need one of these. And it opens up to the backyard. That was awesome.
I even got Tabitha to sign off on that being like a cigar room, right? Like that would be our cigar lounge, the man cave. You know, you could actually smoke in there with good ventilation system.
That was
because of that concrete walls.
That was awesome. Yeah, that was super cool. The whole tour was great. We hope more people can join us walking around next time. We got together afterwards and watched the Mavs lose and had a few drinks and had a great time talking about the houses. So,
but they won last night.
So they're on the right track. Well, that will do it for today. We've got an interview coming up, so please tune in for that. If you have not, like, subscribe, share this podcast with someone else, and until next time. Be nice to yourself and hope you have a great day.